your most worthy and intuitive. That is your higher self. I feel like you're in a trance.
Well, I was just thinking in my head, is Maury just my higher self? Is she like an illusion? Is my whole life made up and it's just Maury in there talking to me?
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we're going to talk about the difference between ego and your higher self. Bean, are you ready for the answers?
Fascinating. Hi, Bean.
Hi. I have to prompt you to say hi to me first.
And I also think that I should do like a, I don't even know, like a cap cut of all the faces I make after I respond from my gut to what you ask me in the beginning at the top of these. I'm always like, yeah, I make all these weird words and sounds and faces. And every single time I make a face at myself, I'm going to cut those all together. Like 365 days of my faces doing.
We can't wait for that.
Check out our YouTube so you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, how's it hanging, man?
Hi. It's hanging pretty good.
Oh, is that delightful? Okay, good. I'd love to hear.
I have a delight that I'm like delighted by, but I'm embarrassed by the fact that I'm delighted by it. But as soon as it happened, I was like, I'm going to tell Bean about this on the podcast.
Oh, I can't wait.
And then I was like, oh, it's going to be so embarrassing that I'm delighted by it for our listeners, but I'm just going to say it because
yes,
I'm so delighted.
What?
Okay. So, oh my God, I feel like I talked about Raina last episode too, but Raina's
fine.
Just,
she's worthwhile.
In my world right now.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I went to go pick up Raina from school yesterday and she gets in the car and she's like, Mom, I have three things to tell you from my friends. And I was like, me? She's like, yeah, three things in one day. I was like, okay.
When teenagers want to say good things about you, I don't know. I thought I would never care. But when teenagers say good things about you as of in your 40s, it's like, you're like, oh my God. I couldn't be cooler.
I couldn't believe it. Like, and then she proceeded to three different friends walked up to her and gave her like compliments about me in the same day.
What? What compliments?
One friend is a boy. We were at the grocery store the day before that. And he came in and like someone had been really mean to him. And he was telling Raina in the store. And I was like, that is not okay. I looked at him. I was like, I just want you to know that is not okay. So then she said yesterday, he was like, Raina, your mom is so kind and so nice. Like just walked into that. And then another friend said something about me not looking my age. And then a third friend apparently was in a class and this boy, the third friend is one of her like best friends in school. She didn't tell her, but this boy that was in class with this friend came and was like, Raina, we had to write today in class about an inspiring figure in our lives. And this friend wrote about your mom.
That is so nice.
I was like, what did she write? She's like, she wrote about how you started your own business and you don't let anything stop you and you do everything on your own and you're so inspirational. I was like, what?
I agree with that 16-year-old. That's how I feel about you.
Bean, I'm killing it with the 16-year-old demographic.
Oh my gosh. Maybe we should try a new angle on this pod. Like talk about, I don't know what 16-year-olds are into. I don't know. My 10-year-old just told me I don't dress cool. She said, you dress okay, but like, it's not on trend or something like that.
Of course it's not.
I think I keep up with the trends. I thought I do. I literally thought I did until my 10-year-old told me otherwise.
You think you keep up with the high school kid trends in the way you dress? You're that delusional?
Not high school, but like, I own barrel jeans. I mean,
but that's what's cool to her is high school kids and the way they're dressing. Those are the trends for your 13-year-old gorgeous daughter.
No, my 10-year-old said this.
Oh, wow. She's savage.
Yeah. Exactly.
But those are the trends for her, too.
Whatever. Anyway, that is rad. There's nothing like a teenage compliment. I'm not going to lie. I don't know what it is, but there's something about it.
But how do you fathom three teenage compliments in one day across gender? I mean, wow. I'm killing it. Tell me about your week. What do you got? What's going on? Cringy? Delighty?
I actually have a delight, but I have a question for you. My delight is attached to a question that I have for you that I'm going to put you on the spot. Also, what does your shirt say?
Oh, it says ambitious.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it's like those kids said, you're ambitious, so they wrote about you.
I put the shirt on after they said it.
Wow, you are ambitious. Amazing. I was in a funk where I wasn't working out. I work out a decent amount and I got in some weird mental block space. And then I finally broke it last Sunday, which you do not think you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So that is my delight is that I was in this space and then I like got really in my head. It was very out of character. The whole thing was very uncomfortable for me. I don't know what triggered it. I think I got like sick or something and then I stopped working out for a little. That triggers
it for me.
But then like I like suddenly was like, I can't go back out of nowhere. It like attacked my brain
to
yoga. And yoga is like life for me. Like it's the peak of my spirituality is probably doing yoga. Like I feel the most connected to the earth and to myself when I do yoga. Yeah. It is nothing but joy for me. And I just couldn't do it. And like even walking, I was like, I walk the dogs. I go for walks. I couldn't do it. I mean, maybe the fact that it's freaking -4 degrees here had something to do with it. But anyway, the question for me is when you are in said block, because this happens to so many people, this hasn't happened to me as much with this. How do you break it? I don't even know how I did it. I just forced myself to go, but sometimes you can't force yourself to go. How can you psychologically break a block?
I generally will honor the block for a certain period of time. I'll try not to fight the block. I'll just be like, okay, you're here, you're here, you're here. And then I will decide that I'm going to feel the block and go do the thing anyway and just say, hey, it's just an experiment today. This happened a lot with writing, like writing the book. It was like, I'm not going to write this chapter, right? Because imposter syndrome was like, you don't know what you're doing. And so I'd let it go because it's also part of my creative process to procrastinate. But I would say then like maybe on the third day, okay, you're feeling the block, but you're going to sit down anyway. And you're just going to see how you feel afterwards. Or you're feeling the block, but you're going to go to the gym anyway. And then just see how you feel. It's just an experiment. So I'll convince myself I'm doing a little experiment. And then I'll feel so good that the serotonin will help me do it again.
Wow, it's so scientific. That's what happened. I went to yoga and I was like, shit, I love yoga. What was I thinking? But that block got bigger and every week it grew. And I would be like, the more I fight it, I'd be like, I'm just going to go on Tuesday. And then I wouldn't go. And then I was like, God damn it. Now it grew again. It grew by like another inch.
But there's something so powerful about registering it for what it is as a separate part. Like, oh, here is a block that's trying to stop me from doing something. Oh, I see you. There you are. You're a block. You know, like separate it from yourself. Look at it and say, oh, there you are, rather than internalize it or have shame over it.
I had shame. I kept being like, what is your deal? Like you love you. What are you doing? Why are you acting like this?
Shame extends things.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened to me, but it is my delight. Thank you that I pushed through. I went, I felt amazing. I was like, no, duh.
You are amazing and you look amazing and you're cool. You dress cool.
Wow. Thank you. This is actually my daughter's sweater.
Oh, well, is that what happened? You turned to just going into her closet once she told you you weren't cool. You were like, fine, I'm going to start wearing your clothes.
I am you now. I single white femaled her.
All right. Well, Bean, listen, we get this question a lot. I get this question a lot when I do content or I'm coaching. People will always, they're very fascinated by the ego. What role does the ego play in this work about, you know, getting closer to your higher self and living your best life and living in alignment with your higher self? And so we thought, why don't we just talk about the difference between your ego and your higher self so that we can have some discernment for our listeners. And that way, you know, the difference, and then you get to kind of choose which part of yourself you're going to listen to.
And frankly, even as your best friend, I have this problem all the time.
You ask me, you're one of the people who asks me all
exactly.
the time.
Exactly. So I am looking forward to listening to this episode.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you. All right. So we are going to start by talking about what each one is. What is the ego? What is the higher self? Because we have to understand them to understand their differences. But before we do that, I'm just going to give you a little blind quiz. Backed into a corner, your life depended on it.
Get away from me.
Oh, tell the difference between ego and higher self. What would you say it is? I just want to hear
you. I knew you were going to do. I hate when you give me pop quizzes, but one of my favorite things is giving you.
It's called hypocrisy.
All right. What would I say? I mean, I think your higher self is your truth and your ego self is what you think you're supposed to say or what you really think you feel based on external circumstances and not a truth that is coming from within.
Oh, okay. And why do you feel like it's important for us to know the difference?
Because one is more valid than the other. I mean, the ego is still a part of you. The ego is still a part of you, but maybe not as in touch with your truest desires as your higher self, because there are too many other factors at play, not just your core truth.
Bean, A did I do it? Answers. Look
Yay,
at you.
Thank
you. You knew intuitively. So that's why it's important for you to know the difference, is because if you want to live a life in total alignment with your desires and what is true to you, like true really to you, that is the only way to be fulfilled in this life, is to live your life, not live someone right. else's life. So you want to live your life, you have to learn the difference between what your ego is telling you and what your higher self is telling you. So that's why we're making this episode. Bean, A+, 3 gold stars. Thanks. Wow.
Even when I meditate and I'm hearing what would be referred to as my higher self, I'm always like, who is that? Like, is that the right one? Or
Get
did I
here.
Put, yeah. did I implant that idea? Am I hearing my own self? Like, what's happening?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm here, first of all, as I am with all of my work, to make sure we don't have shame or judgment over the ego. I don't really love the idea in healing that you have to have a full ego death to live this life fulfilled. There is a benefit to having experiences where your ego does get put aside, like, you know, psilocybin journeys where we've talked about, where your ego does move aside and you're seeing things completely without ego, because that's how you actually see.
Right. That's the most clear. That's the most clarity. So why shouldn't you then have an ego death?
But you aren't going to live that way 24/7, because you're a human being and ego is part of being a human being.
And it's overwhelming.
So, well, let's talk about the ego. Like, what is the role of the ego? Why does it exist?
Sure.
So the ego is basically just our ability to have a sense of self. The ego is what detects you as a self. Not a part of a larger conglomerate, but an individual being who has needs that are based on your survival.
Like, even somebody stranded on an island alone who has never encountered another human has an ego, you are telling me.
Correct. Your ego is the part of you that detects you as a self. Okay. It is the part of you that goes, oh, I am Melissa.
Ugh,
and I am an
name.
Individual being. Did you say worst name?
Yeah. My higher self says, when my ego says, I am Melissa, my higher self goes, ugh, you need a different name.
Your higher self would never say that to you. Well, all right. But often this detection of self part of us is rooted in fear and societal conditioning, because the ego's entire function is to protect self.
Societal conditioning. That's what I was saying about an island, deserted island. Are you really having an ego there?
But this is where I don't want us to put ego in a label or a category as negative, which is what happens a lot in the conversation about ego. And Carl Jung, we're going to talk about Carl Jung, the philosopher a lot. He's talked a lot about, there's Jungian dream therapy. He talks about dreams. He talks about how we see ourselves. He talks about the conscious mind, the subconscious mind. His work is really foundational in the way we understand consciousness and self. And so he's done a lot of really important work around ego. So you're going to hear his name a lot. But Carl Jung says the ego is necessary for us to navigate the external world. We can't navigate the world that we live in unless we see ourselves as a self and we're thinking about what self needs and how self needs to survive.
Right.
But when it's unchecked, it's overbearing. And we haven't learned how to put ego in balance. So here's some characteristics of your ego. Your ego is most likely to make fear-based decisions. Your ego is thinking about protecting you. So fear-based decision-making comes from your ego. Your ego also seeks control. Your ego operates under the illusion that you can control every facet of your life, because it is only detecting self. So what's left out of that equation? Support, the universe, your right. divine connection, your connection to all of consciousness. It does not detect that. It detects self as the only reality that exists. So it is under the illusion that it can control all outcomes. Okay. Your ego is also the part of you that seeks validation, because your ego is looking at its value in relation to other. How are others telling me that I am? What am I worthy of? Your ego is the part of you that seeks validation. And it can also be, because of that, driven by things like pride,
right?
Or comparison or insecurity. Because again, it is trying to measure self up against other things. It's constantly focused on self.
I'm not loving my ego right now based on all these things you're saying. I'm not so hot for ego.
I know. And that's the thing, is that ego, particularly right now in this moment in time in our society, is
yes.
It's gotten really over, it's overgrown.
Out of hand.
Out of hand, right. But the ego plays a really important role in individuation. Right? Like, it's important to understand right. yourself as an individual, because if you see yourself only as part of a collective, you're not really checking in with who am I? What do I need? What am I trying to express in this lifetime?
Right.
So it's really essential to you being an individual. Carl Jung, for example, says that balancing the ego with self is what creates psychological wholeness. So there is no ability to take it away. You have to balance it with your higher self, so that you have this whole psychological life.
That's accurate. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's right.
Yeah, he's right. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. If he needed any validation, I'm here to say, sounds right. Carl Jung.
So if you think about this idea of individuation, let's just take 2 minutes and talk about that.
Okay.
Individuation is just this process of integrating all parts of the psyche, conscious and unconscious, into a harmonious and whole self. So you're taking your psyche, the parts that are conscious and unconscious, and you are incorporating them into a understanding of your whole self. That's what individuation is, and that's what ego is allowing you to do. So the journey toward becoming authentic and unique is truly about having your ego work in your favor. You have to individuate to be authentic and unique.
Does your ego and your higher self, do they have to work together, or they just have to be both recognized?
That's a great question. It is a balance. It is a dance between the two. And that's what I really want the takeaway to be from this conversation, is it's not about getting rid of ego to embody higher self.
Right.
It's about allowing ego to play the role it needs to play for your authenticity, uniqueness, desire to come out.
Right.
But then allowing your higher self to help you get those needs met in a more whole, abundant, caring way for yourself. So we'll get to the higher self part.
Is it fair to say that the ego is like a gateway for the higher self, or incorrect?
That's such a good question.
Thank
That's
you.
A really good question.
Why, thank you.
Is the ego a gateway for the higher self?
Are you receiving information right now, for real? Or are you just thinking?
I was tapping in and getting some information.
It's so wild to watch.
Your ego is part of what allows you to detect your higher self.
Oh, shit.
As being your higher self.
What?
But really, your higher self is a collective consciousness you're channeling it into.
Oh, fascinating.
Your collective consciousness is the source energy, right? It is where we all originate from. It is the energy from which we come. That is the collective consciousness. Your ego is what allows you to be able to take bite sizes of that, because that concept is so massive for our brains to understand, that you're able to tap into that collective consciousness as it being about self, your higher self. If there was no ego, there would be no self.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Well,
was it
explained.
Clear? Because it was, okay.
Yes, I think that the ego almost allows you to embody the part of the collective consciousness that is within you.
Correct.
It's like a vessel for it almost.
There we go. Yes. It allows you to interpret it
right
as unique to you so that you can then live a unique purpose here.
Love.
Got Love. It? Okay, Got good. It. So that's why it can be in balance. So the ego is the conscious part of the psyche that forms our sense of identity. It's the I. Right? So it's essential for navigating daily life. It's essential for understanding the world. But it's limited in its perspective, like we just talked about, right? Because like I said, it's tapping this collective consciousness, but it's got to put it in this. And so what it does, because it's limited in its perspective, is it clings to societal norms and it clings to experiences from the past that create fear and limiting belief systems because it puts I in front of it. So, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard this saying, but I am are the two most important words a human can utter. And whatever comes after that is what is your reality. Your ego is taking a lot of your experiences and creating I am statements that are limiting beliefs. I am unworthy. I am too much. I am not good in relationships. I am lazy. Like, think about some of the things right now for a second that you tell yourself about yourself that you believe to be truths that are limiting. That's your ego creating an identity out of that fearful or upsetting experience. It's creating a limiting identity statement.
What about the positive things that the ego is telling me?
That's also your ego.
Like, you're fun.
Yep. That's also your ego. I am fun. I am nurturing. I am a good mother. Yeah. That's a full ego statement.
So it might not be accurate.
It's not my accurate.
It's my reality.
Remember, your ego is not all negative. It's what allows you to see yourself as an I. So it will reflect the true positive parts of you as well. But it's also the part of you that clings to the trauma that creates the limiting belief systems and the societal norms that it's comparing itself to. So what Carl Jung says is that in individuation, for this to be done in a healthy, balanced way, the ego has to recognize its place as a mediator rather than the master.
Oh, love.
Balance. What do you like? What does that say? What does that mean when you hear that to you?
I feel like it almost has to be a more neutral interpretation of these thoughts and experiences in order for your higher self to come through. Mm-hmm. There can't be all of these even positive or negative emotions attached. It has to just be sort of like the vessel.
Perfect. It has to sit there as a moderator. This is this information. This is this information. This is this information. The reason that it becomes problematic for us is that we allow it to become the master. And by the master, the way that I say it, like when I'm in a session, it's like, who's in the driver's seat? Who's driving this car right now? And if the ego is the only one making decisions, then you're not able to hear your higher self, the part of your consciousness that's tapped into something greater and more divine.
But should we be ignoring our ego or just working towards getting it to be more neutral?
We're working toward not believing the parts of it that are limiting so that we can create room for higher self to inform our idea of self and then balance both of those voices. So if you think about like when Jung says self, for example, it represents this central unifying force of the psyche. Self is the part, it's like the glue that's bringing the entire psyche together and it's encompassing your conscious and your unconscious self. So the ego, to answer your question, has to surrender this illusion of control so that you're allowing this self, or as I say, higher self,
to
guide you towards greater harmony. So if the higher self is this unifying force of your conscious and your unconscious self, then the ego has to say, oh, I recognize that there's a larger self, that I am not the only one that must be in control for our survival. It has to hand some of that over to the larger self or higher self, as I call it.
Are we allowed to believe or follow along with the positive aspects the ego brings to our lives? Or
as
just trying to,
as long as we are not relying on those positive aspects to define ourselves
fully.
Yeah.
Got
right. So what we have to do in this work is confront this unconscious part, this shadow side of our ego that has the limiting belief systems. Oh. Hence this method that you know that I've created, which is about
what method?
Which is about really, if you want to embody your higher self, it starts with addressing the limiting belief systems, and that's the ego self.
Interesting.
What do you think so far? Thoughts, questions, feelings?
I just love how almost everything we do, it doesn't have to be tied back into your method or what you believe in. It just like naturally goes there. Like you just you understood a concept that applies like to everything. Do you understand what I mean? Does that make any sense to you?
Like, I want you to make that as a promo for the book and let's get that out there.
All right. Write that down, everyone. Everybody will love to read that from me. They'll be like, from who?
From her best friend. She understands everything that everything ever needs to be.
Her method applies to all things all the time. Perfectly.
Okay. So let's just talk about this shadow aspect of the ego, this limited self. The shadow aspect of ego is basically just, like I said, limiting beliefs and fears and repressed desires.
Oh, sexy.
Right? So the shadow is this part of the unconscious psyche that contains hidden, socially unacceptable aspects of ourselves.
Oh, no.
Which creates shame. And so think about then why there's so much work being done as we evolve to talk about how different people are worthy and acceptable. Because prior to our consciousness evolving, our culture and society was telling us what was acceptable. And those of us that didn't fit into those buckets, which by the way, white or not, male or female, non-binary, all of us have shadow parts of ourselves that we are ashamed of.
Of course.
All of us, right?
100%.
And in fact, this is the challenge we're having right now with men and boys who feel that they have to not have emotion. And so emotion is something that they feel is a shadow aspect of self.
Right.
So even those of us that are privileged and in power have this happening. But then if you go from there to who they have oppressed and what standards they have created for being valuable, then every community that doesn't fit what those that are in control say is good is going to have more aspects within themselves that are in this shadow closet, this part that contains shame.
And I know you're saying we're evolved, but it feels like that's still completely happening right now.
Yeah, we're evolving. I mean, this is my answer to when you hear, really frightened conservatives say, why the woke? Why do it has to be in our face that you're trans? It's like, right. Because it's important for people to wake up to the knowledge that that is not a shameful part of self. And unless we keep shouting it from the rooftops, that part stays in the closet. So that is why woke progressives are frustrating you with shouting it from the rooftops. It's actually a societal evolution of consciousness about what's acceptable. So for instance, if someone sees themselves as kind and selfless, then they might repress feelings of anger. Or if you think you're selfless, you might repress desire you have around things. Last week, we had Kendall on to talk about money. And one of the things she said, which I thought was such a light bulb moment, is spend money on the things you love.
Right.
And don't feel shame over it.
Right.
Well, we have been taught that that can be selfish. So we're going to repress and set aside those parts of ourselves. And those parts then become the shadow part of our ego.
Right.
So what we're going to do then is we're going to manifest these unconscious repressed behaviors and projections that create conflict in our life.
It's so unfortunate.
Right. Because our ego wants to identify ourselves as selfless. That's the label that's acceptable societally. So instead of facing what I want, I'm going to shove it in the shadow closet. And right. Then I'm going to say that I'm perfectly selfless, but I'm going to be passive aggressive. I'm going to be judgmental. I'm going to be an asshole to the person behind me in traffic.
And I'm not actually selfless in because of that.
Yeah, totally. So one of the things that this work is about in accepting ego as being something you're never going to get rid of, though, is understanding what are the parts that my ego's put in the shadow closet.
Right.
And how do I start to look at those things and confront them and integrate them in a loving, more accepting way? I always tell people, if you have a desire, it's naturally in you as part of your purpose. It is divinely implanted in you as part of your purpose on this planet. When you can see your desire that way, you're able to integrate it into your life and into your psyche without so much judgment and shame.
What if your desire is harmful?
That is a question that I feel like we've gotten into before, because it comes up a lot when I talk about desire.
Yeah.
Your desire becomes harmful, I believe, from a place of repression.
Interesting.
So I'm talking about honoring your truth and who you are and the shadow aspects so that it doesn't turn into harm.
Got it.
I think the thing that I said before about, like, when you deny the shadow, it doesn't eliminate it. It manifests in unconscious behaviors and conflicts.
Right.
So I think that harm, desiring harm, is coming out of a place of repression of true actual desire. Harm is not the desire. Harm is the projection.
Right.
The desire is something you're denying beneath it.
Got it.
So we want to just accept the parts of ourselves that we have not accepted, so that ego isn't running amok, isn't running wild. You asked, how do we get it into balance? This is the biggest way, is to not allow ego to stick things in a shadow closet and tell us they're not acceptable because society doesn't accept them.
And I wonder if the more amok the ego is running, the louder it is and the more deafening mm-hmm. it is for your higher self, because it's so out of control that it's all you can pay attention to.
100%. 100%. The reason we don't hear our intuition is because our ego is projecting so much fear and it is so loud, and we react and make decisions from that place of should instead of deep knowing.
Right.
Yeah. So just so that you know that, like, shadow is something that is practical and happens every day, I just wanted to give some examples of, like, the shadow part of ego in action. The first one is projection. It's seeing qualities in others that we don't like or that we judge because we have them in ourselves or we're ashamed of them in ourselves. Right. Every time I have a visceral judgment about someone, I know for a fact it's something about me that I'm ashamed of.
I haven't gotten good at identifying that, but I would really like to.
Yeah. Let's play with it.
Let's play.
Yeah. So for example, someone who's criticizing someone else for being selfish, they might actually be unconsciously denying their own selfish tendencies, their own ways of putting themselves first. And so the projection is, wow, Melissa's so selfish, rather than, oh, you know what? I feel like in these instances, I'm putting myself first and I feel ashamed of that. Or I want to put myself first and I can't because I'm ashamed of my desires.
I'm glad that you just clarified that.
Yeah.
I was coming up with my own example that I'm like, this doesn't apply.
Yeah. It's but- also, I mean, envy is a big part of the way that we create judgment, because we want something, but we don't right. want to own the fact that we want it. So we exist in envy, which creates judgment.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you feel like you have a good grasp of ego?
Yes. Much better, truthfully, than I ever did.
Great.
And I was a psych minor.
We're going to pivot. That's like when I say I was a Spanish minor and I can't even, like, talk to, like, you know, the person.
You were?
Yeah.
Oh,
I like read novels in Spanish.
Wow. Muy bueno. Wow.
And then I get all freaked out about talking to anyone.
Oh, wow.
Let's okay.
try it. That's your ego talking.
That's my ego, exactly, saying that I can't do it. So we understand ego. So now we're going to do what I said, which is understand higher self so we can juxtapose it.
Put your hand okay. under the book behind you, also called self-titled higher self. I think I should get one for my shelf behind me also, please.
You should. Well, this is just the proof. When we get the real hard cover. We'll put it there. Okay. Higher self. I mean, listen, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, then I will define it for you. But if you've been one of our really loyal, amazing listeners, then you know for damn well sure what your higher self is.
And if you don't, then get out.
No, don't get out. No, I'm Welcome. Totally We're happy kidding. To have you. So your higher self is the part of you that is the most aligned to your inner truth, who you are, what you want, what you desire. It is totally, unconditionally loving of you and others. It is the seat of your intuition, the source of your intuition. Or as I say in the book, intuition is the language of your higher self. That is how it speaks to you. And it is the engine of your purpose. Your higher self is there to allow you to live your purpose. So think about you when you are feeling your most confident, your most worthy, your most clear and loving and lovable and intuitive. That is your higher self. I feel like you're in a trance.
Well, I was just thinking in my head, is Maury just my higher self? Is she like an illusion? Is everything, is my whole life made up and it's just Maury in there talking to me? Yes.
Okay. So we talked about the characteristics of ego. Let's talk about the characteristics of higher self.
Okay.
Higher self operates from love, compassion, and purpose.
I'm way more into the higher self than the ego. I can get behind it.
Higher self does not also, this is a big differentiator. Higher self does not believe in scarcity. Scarcity is actually an illusion. Higher self understands the inherent abundance of our world, meaning that I can have it and you can have it. That I can be enough and you can be enough. That there is no need for me to hoard out of an egoic space of this is my identity. But that my identity as a beautiful, wealthy, successful person can coexist with your identity as a beautiful, wealthy, successful person.
Did we just manifest that?
We did. Done. Where ego is seeking external validation, higher self seeks internal validation. Higher self is there to ensure that you see yourself for your value and that you are aligned to your decisions because they match what you want and need internally, not because someone else tells you that that is what you need. Higher self is interested in growth. So I tell people that ego is a survival mechanism. Higher self is a thriving mechanism. Higher self. So ego is there making sure the plant's getting sun and water.
Right.
Higher self is like, let's grow as tall and as fruitful as possible. It's the energy of desiring growth.
Do younger people, I'm thinking of like teenagers, are they all, their higher self is also in the same boat? Also yeah. Like abundance and growth. I feel like they really can't hear it. Their ego is just so paying attention to their surroundings and fitting in and making it work that they are, their higher self is like muted.
Love this. And when you guys get the book, read chapter 4. Because chapter 4 is called My Teenage Hero. And what I say is that our higher self is really loud in our teenage years. It is the force that causes us to rebel because we need to individuate from our families for our survival and our ability to grow and thrive. Higher self is the one individuating you from your family while your egoic fear self is concerned about what your peers think. So it's very active in you, but you're still in this dance.
No wonder it's so chaotic. Yeah, no wonder. Yeah. So it's not muted. It's actually really loud. It's
loud.
Clearer than you've ever heard before, but it's so confusing.
Clearer than you've heard since you were a very young child. Yes.
Wow. Wild.
Okay. The other thing, characteristic of higher self, is that higher self is acting in alignment with your values and your truth. So I always say I value freedom. My higher self is acting in alignment with getting that value met at all times. And then my truth, what I really think, not what I'm performing, but what I really believe. Your higher self is there to do that. So for example, we had a situation at this retreat you and I went to once where there was an instructor that came in that did not instruct in a way that I felt allowed women of color to exist in dignity in that room.
Right.
Some of the content that she had as a white privileged woman did not allow, and it was just me and one other woman who were people of color in that room. And what my ego fear self usually did in those situations in trying to please was to make that person feel even more comfortable or try to ingratiate myself to that person so that they then gave me their validation. that I also mattered because their content had left me out. So I needed the validation that I mattered. And as I've really been working on embodying higher self so that I can be a living model, in that moment, and you and I had this conversation, I in fact embodied dignity, which was if I rejected a teaching, I would say it. If a teaching was not resonating with me, I would show it like I would just sit there in my confidence rather than shrinking or trying to make eye contact or trying to get, you know, their validation. And it created actually a bit of a conflict with this instructor later in the evening. Like she did not feel comfortable in my presence, but my higher self helped me understand that wasn't my job. My job was not to make her comfortable in my presence. My job was to stand guard around my truth and in my dignity. So that's an example.
Yeah, it is. You're such a badass.
So we understand that this is all part of our higher self. And in fact, Carl Jung, I think when he was talking about the concept of self as the totality of your psychic, including the conscious, I think he's saying higher self. But I want to talk about how we can tell the difference, because I want you guys, as you're out there operating in the world, trying to grow and be your best self, as you're making decisions in your life, it's really powerful to learn discernment between the ego, fear self, and the higher self. And then, as I always say, you're accountable to the choice. And there's no judgment. I pick up yourself all the time. But it's important at least to know that there are two selves. That way the ego's not the master, because you're allowing the ego to know, oh no, there's a whole other self I have to take into consideration. So here's a few tangible takeaway tools or things to think about.
You know what I like.
Okay. Key differences. Ego reacts, higher self responds.
What?
Ego reacts. Ego is reacting to a situation.
Right.
Without, like, it's just doing its thing. Higher self, if you listen in, it gives you a response. And then you can think about how you want to behave or what action you want to take. Higher self is the part of you you can tap for answers, and it will give you a response, not an action, an answer. Higher self's just going to do an action. I mean, sorry, ego self is just going to do a reactive action.
I don't think I hear my higher self a lot.
I think you do.
I do?
When you say you trust your gut or this feeling you get about someone, that's a response from your higher self.
Yeah.
You're meeting someone, your higher self giving you a response, and it's about listening. Ego seeks to protect and control. Higher self seeks to trust and surrender. Trust yourself. Surrender to the fact that you are not an individual operating outside of a larger consciousness. Higher self has faith in itself and in the universe.
I think that's where it gets a little murky for me, because your ego is the thing that has to do with everybody else, and your higher self is yourself, but it also has to do with everybody else. That's where I think it gets convoluted for me.
In the larger consciousness. Remember I said you come from a larger divine consciousness.
Right.
You come from source energy. Higher self has faith in that connection. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah. I just struggle with collective consciousness because I go back and forth of like, is that real? Is that not real? That's maybe that's why it's convoluted for me.
Yeah. The other thing that you can tell the difference, ego is loud and urgent. Ego creates a lot of inside of you. Higher self is quiet and steady. It's just very, like I say, your intuition is like a period at the end of a sentence. It's very, comes through steady, factual, clear, calm. It's emotionally neutral. Ego is what creates a lot of the anxiety, the fear feelings, all of that, like loud shouting at you. Oh my God, if you don't do this, this is gonna, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So here are some signs you're operating from your ego. You have a fear of judgment. You're in self-doubt a lot. Or you have excessive pride. No one can do it better than you. You're the best at this thing. You're making decisions from a reactive place. And also, if you're feeling stuck in like patterns of comparing yourself or feeling inadequate, that's a sign that your ego is in master mode.
Yeah.
Signs you're operating from higher self. Clear, calm decision making. Feeling like you are in touch with your intuition and it's guiding your choices. A sense of peace, even in challenging times. Like, I know what I know, and I'm going to navigate through this with that knowing as my compass, rather than this fear-based, oh my God, if you don't do this, then you're going to miss out on that. It's having some faith in the intuitive answers.
I want to hear it. We may have already covered this. Quick question though. How do we quiet the ego a little bit when it's super loud?
This is a great question.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to, maybe that's how we end.
Okay. I love that. Cause I think that's actually the greatest challenge for most people is once I can differentiate, what do I do?
Yeah. Yeah. So it always starts with practicing self-awareness. And what that means is literally registering the thoughts and feelings that are contracting, that are reactive, that are loud and urgent, and putting them in the bucket of this is fear. This is ego-driven fear. Being aware that that is what's happening, rather than accepting those thoughts as like, this is just truth. But being able to discern and put them in that bucket of, oh, this thought is a fear-based thought because it's coming through loud. This thought is a fear-based thought because it's making me feel bad. It's making me feel like I have to be reactive right now. That's one way to practice self-awareness. And you can even do this in journaling. Like, you can sit down at the end of the day and think about, what are some feelings I had today or thoughts that I had today that felt contracting, that felt upsetting, that felt fearful, that felt reactive? What are ways I acted that were reactive? Keep a log,
right,
of the ways that fear voice, that ego-driven fear voice, is showing up in your life and telling you what to do.
This just answered a really gigantic question that's been on my mind for a long time. I'm not going to share it right now, but I literally, it just came to me in this episode. So thank you.
That you're going to leave it like that?
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I think I've said it before, you and I never know what's happening here, but it always feels very good. And it gets that feeling, I often am like, well, what's that all about? Is it just because we're friends and I like doing stuff with my friend, or is it not? But like, no, there's a deep knowing in me that right now, this is where I need to be. And I've been toying right now with an idea of getting a 9-to-5 and like having like a solid understanding of where I'm going to be and what next year is going to look like for me. And that is literally only out of fear. 100%.
Beautiful. There we go.
100%. Every aspect of me saying I'm going to get that 9-to-5 is, everything is fear driven. Every part of it.
And knowing
it's not where I want to go right now. It might be in a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But right now I know in my core that this is where I want to be.
But putting it in that category of fear immediately allowed you to tell me what your inner knowing was saying. That's what I'm saying. So once you decipher and you discern and you put it in the category of fear, instantaneously, your intuition speaks to you. And that's the second part, connecting with your intuition. So once you've done that, tapping in, what's the first real feeling I feel? What does knowing feel like to me? Think about it. Like, when you just know something, what is that feeling? Chasing that feeling. And if that means you've got to meditate or sit silently or go for a walk, find a process that allows you to get into that experience of knowing.
But the reality is, I am in that experience of knowing, but it's so frightening because this podcast and where you and I are, like all of these things, there's so much uncertainty surrounding all of it that even the knowing is almost too frightening to handle sometimes. You know what I mean?
The knowing isn't frightening. The ego is telling you to be afraid of what you're getting.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. So then do the same process again. Oh, I'm noticing the ego-driven fear is telling me to be afraid of my intuition. Just notice it and put it in that category. And then you're doing this. Another important way to connect to your higher self is to allow space for mistakes. Understand that mistakes are what are allowing you to grow, and to understand that you are here to express your purpose and your truth. So trying really hard to shift away from external validation into internal validation. How do I make sure this life I'm living, this decision I made today, this way of being feels good in here? It's an inside job, not Melissa told me I did a good job today.
You did do a good job today,
B. Thank you. And then lastly, really aligning your actions with your values. Take a moment and think about, what do I value most in life? And how do you know what you value? It's the things that make you feel fulfilled, passionate, excited, at peace.
I know what I value. That's actually really helpful because I do. I'm very clear on what I value.
Beautiful. So then aligning your actions to your values is how you embody your higher self. And then your ego is there just to register, oh, Melissa did this good thing today. Yay. And when ego goes overboard into the shadow place, we just get to say, oh, there's my ego amplifying my fear as a form of survival. So we're not telling ego to go away. We're just watching it. Oh, look at what you're doing there. And that's right. How we're able to move ego into that mediator mode rather than driving all of our actions and decision making. I'm going to say one last thing on science because I know that you value science.
Sure do.
So much research on mindfulness has happened, and research has shown that reducing any ego-driven reactivity actually fosters a higher state of awareness, which means it brings your higher self to life. Science.
The proof's in the pudding. Maury's a scientist. Write that down.
I'm a scientist. Also, we've talked about this a lot, but brain studies across multiple countries have shown the impact of meditation on reducing this activity in the default mode network in your brain that's associated with your ego. So when you are meditating or you're focusing on the present moment, as so many philosophers have said, they're actually noticing that the brain wave patterns in your default mode network that's associated to your ego, the activity is reduced there. So that's a way of literally trying to balance your ego.
Meditation. I got to get back to it.
All right, Bean, what is your famous Melissa's takeaways? Oh, take us away.
I feel like the ego has a really negative connotation, and it's really plays an important role in kind of harnessing your higher self so that it is part of this greater collective, but you have to make it apply to you and your world, and the ego is sort of there to do that. So like you said, you use the language, it's like a beautiful dance. So they need to work together. You don't need to suppress either or. You just need to understand them and their function to get them to work best together.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well said. Hey, do you want to do the plea for sharing this episode so that I'm not always the one asking people to do shit?
Fine. While you're I'm going to do it. And I'm going to say that part of me debating all the time about this 9-to-5 and like just doing is because this is a weird space, a weird way of relaying, of doing something that you really love.
We make no money making this podcast.
We make no money.
And we put our money into making this podcast. And that's what she's trying to say.
And we do it because we really like believe in it. Truly, both of us truly believe in it. Yeah. And we really like, we could have stopped forever ago because we feel like we're talking into the void half the time, but we haven't. And I think there's something to that. And I hope that you can feel that. And because of that, you want to share this with two people. Like, I don't want to force anyone to share it. I want you to feel what we're feeling and want others that you care about to also feel that. So please share it. If beautiful. You're so inclined to. Yes.
Yes. And the more people listen, then the more opportunity we get to make this podcast. And also, if you're so inclined by that beautiful plea, also, if you could leave us a review wherever you're listening right now, that makes a huge difference as well.
You like Amazon reviews? We like podcast reviews.
Yeah, we do. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week with another new episode of Signal. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.